Chapter 4. Value Delivery. Every successful business actually delivers what it promises to its customers. There's a term for a person who takes other people's money without delivering equivalent value. Scam artist. Value delivery involves everything necessary to ensure that every paying customer is a happy customer. Order processing, inventory management, delivery and fulfillment, troubleshooting, customer support, etc. Without value delivery, you don't have a business. The best businesses in the world deliver the value they've promised to their customers in a way that surpasses the customer's expectations. Customers like to get the benefits of their purchases quickly, reliably, and consistently. The more happy customers a business creates, the more likely it is that those customers will purchase from the company again. Happy customers are also more likely to tell others about what you do, improving your reputation and bringing in even more potential customers. Successful businesses satisfy their customers most of the time in the midst of a changing environment. Unsuccessful businesses fail to make their customers happy, lose them, and eventually fail. Value stream. When I worked at Procter & Gamble, one of the most fascinating things about my job was understanding how products were created and delivered. Here's a quick look at how a bottle of Dawn dishwashing detergent is made. Number one, raw materials are delivered to the factory. Number two, the materials are combined to create dishwashing liquid, which is stored in large vats. Number three, plastic bottles are blown into shape using molds, then filled with the liquid and capped. Number four, adhesive labels are applied to each bottle. And number five, each bottle is inspected, boxed, then loaded onto a pallet. It's a textbook example of a value creation process, which begins with raw materials and ends with finished products ready to be shipped. Here's what happens next. Number six, pallets are wrapped, stacked, and stored for shipment in a warehouse. Number seven, when orders from customers are placed, pallets are moved into position for loading onto a truck. Number eight, a truck picks up the pallets and delivers them to the customer's closest distribution center. Number nine, the customer puts the pallets on a delivery truck. Number 10, the truck delivers the pallet to a store that needs additional inventory. And number 11, the store unwraps the pallet, unboxes the product, and transfers it to the shelf, where it will remain until purchased by a customer. That's a lot of steps for a little bottle of dish soap. Those steps are worth studying. That's a lot of steps for a little bottle of dish soap. Those steps are worth studying. A value stream is the set of all steps and all processes from the start of your value creation process all the way through the delivery of the end result to your customer. Understanding what your offer's value stream looks like is critically important if you want to be able to deliver value to your customers quickly, reliably, and consistently. You can think of the value stream as a combination of your value creation and value delivery processes. Very often, your offer moves directly from the first into the second. Even though the purpose of these core processes are very different, treating them as one big process can help you improve your ability to deliver the value you create. The Toyota Production System was the first large-scale manufacturing operation to systematically examine its entire value stream on a regular basis. Analyzing the production system in great detail paved the way for an ongoing series of small incremental improvements. Toyota engineers make over 1 million improvements to the Toyota production system each year. As a result, the company consistently reaps huge rewards in speed, consistency, and reliability, which has greatly improved Toyota's reputation as a company with very high-quality products. That is, until the paradox of automation, which we'll discuss later, destroy that reputation. The best way to understand your value stream is to diagram it. Tracing the steps or transformations your offer goes through from beginning to end is an extremely enlightening process that can show you just how efficient your value delivery process is. It's very common for processes to contain unnecessary steps or awkward transitions. Creating a complete diagram of your entire value stream takes effort, but it can help you streamline your process, making the entire system perform better. In general, try to make your value stream as small and efficient as possible. As we'll examine later when we discuss systems, the longer your process, the greater the risk of things going wrong. The shorter and more streamlined your value stream, the easier it is to manage, and the more effectively you'll be able to deliver value. Distribution channel. Once a sale is made, you must deliver what you promised to your customer. A distribution channel describes how your form of value is actually delivered to the end user. There are two basic types of distribution channels, direct to user and intermediary. Direct to user distribution works across a single channel, from the business directly to the end user. Services are a classic example. When you get a haircut, the value is provided by the business itself directly to you, with no intermediary. Direct-to-user distribution is simple and effective, but it has limitations. You have full control of the entire process, but you can only serve as many customers as your time and energy allow. Once demand for your offer outpaces your ability to deliver it, you're risking disappointing your customers and diminishing your reputation. Intermediary distribution works across multiple channels. When you purchase a product from a store, that store is acting as a reseller. The store, in most cases, doesn't manufacture the products. It purchases them from another business. The business that created the product can sell it to as many stores as it wants, a process called securing distribution. The more distribution a product has, the more sales the business is likely to make. The more stores selling the product, the more opportunities for sales. Intermediary distribution can increase sales, but it requires giving up a certain amount of control over your value delivery process. Trusting another business to deliver your offer to your customers frees up your limited time and energy, but it also increases counterparty risk, the risk that your partner will screw up and diminish your reputation. Imagine you're in the business of selling cookies and you secure distribution at a local supermarket. The supermarket purchases cookies from you, places them on the shelves, and sells them to their shoppers at a premium. Instead of buying cookies from you directly, shoppers purchase them via the supermarket. Classic intermediary distribution. It's easy to see the benefits of this approach, but there are drawbacks. Let's say your cookies are damaged in the supermarket's truck on the way to the store. They break, crumble, and the box they're delivered in is crushed. The supermarket shoppers won't know exactly what happened, but if it happens often, they'll assume that you create a low-quality product, damaging your reputation. Securing distribution can be valuable, but keep an eye on your intermediaries. Distribution isn't a set-it-and-forget-it strategy. If you're working with multiple distribution channels, plan to devote time and energy to making sure they're representing your business well. The expectation effect. Zappos has perfected the art of selling shoes online. Selling shoes over the internet is a tough business. Customers can't try them on, and no one wants to be stuck with shoes they don't like and will never wear. To compensate, Zappos applies classic risk reversal to every order. They offer free shipping and free, no-questions-asked returns if you don't like the products you order. These two policies eliminate the risk of making a bad purchase, so customers are more willing to try Zappos out. That's not, however, the reason Zappos has developed such a solid reputation in this market. The secret lies in an unexpected benefit the company doesn't advertise. When you order from Zappos, it's very likely that you'll receive a pleasant surprise. Your shoes will arrive the next day, several days ahead of schedule. Zappos could easily advertise free expedited shipping, but they don't. The surprise is far more valuable. A customer's perception of quality relies on two criteria: expectations and performance. You can characterize this relationship in the form of a quasi-equation, which I call the expectation effect. Quality equals performance minus expectations. Customer expectations have to be high enough for a customer to purchase from you in the first place. After the purchase is made, however, the performance of the offering must surpass the customer's expectations in order for them to be satisfied. If performance is better than expectations, the customer's perception of quality will be high. If performance is lower than expectations, the perception of quality will be low, no matter how good the offer is in absolute terms. Apple's first-generation iPhone was a massive success. Customers expected something good, and they received a device that delivered benefits well beyond their expectations. Apple's second-generation iPhone, the 3G, wasn't as well received. Pre-launch expectations were so high that there was almost no way the company could surpass them, and a few glitches in the rollout process quickly took center stage. The iPhone 3G was a better product in the absolute. It was faster and had several new features, more memory, and a lower price. To many customers, however, it didn't feel better. Apple failed to deliver on their expectations, and the company's reputation suffered. The same thing happened again with the launch of the fourth-generation iPhone. A small antenna glitch soured many customers on the device, even though the new version was demonstrably better than the old. The best way to consistently surpass expectations is to give your customers an unexpected bonus in addition to the value they expect. The purpose of the value delivery process is to ensure that your customers are happy and satisfied, and the best way to ensure customer satisfaction is to at least meet the customer's expectations, surpassing them whenever you possibly can. Do whatever you can do to provide something that unexpectedly delights your customers. Zappos' free upgraded shipping is more valuable as a surprise. If it were part of the deal, it would lose its emotional punch. When you perform well above your customers' expectations, they'll be satisfied with the experience. Predictability. Aaron Shira, one of my best friends growing up, bootstrapped a painting company with his brother Patrick in Columbus, Ohio. Shira Sons Painting specializes in large-scale painting projects. They've painted universities, military bases, megachurches, and multi-million-dollar homes. Starting from scratch, they're now the preferred painting company for several major general contractors in the Columbus area. How did two young guys break into a competitive market against contractors who had been in business longer than they'd been alive? Simple. When you hire Aaron and Pat, you can be absolutely certain the job will be done right and on time. Contractors are notoriously unpredictable. They often show up late, take too long, do sloppy work, and have bad attitudes. The secret of Aaron and Pat's success is predictability. They do great work every single time, deliver on schedule, and they're always pleasant to work with. As a result, they're booked solid, an impressive achievement, particularly in a soft construction market. When purchasing something of value, customers want to know exactly what they can expect. They want their experience to be predictable. Unexpected surprises can provide a customer with a great experience, but if you're not able to deliver what the customer expects in a predictable manner, it doesn't matter how many bonuses you offer. People love pleasant surprises, but they hate to be caught off guard. There are three primary factors that influence the predictability of an offer: uniformity, consistency, and reliability. Uniformity means delivering the same characteristics every time. Coca-Cola was one of the first large companies to combine solid marketing with large-scale product uniformity. Product uniformity in the beverage industry is an astounding feat. Creating, bottling, and distributing soda is an incredibly complex logistical process. A little too much sugar or flavoring, slightly more air, or an introduction of bacteria can drastically alter the final product. No one wants their favorite soda to taste different every time they drink it. When you open a can of Coke, you expect exactly the same product as you had the last time, no matter where you are in the world. Even if 0.01% of the cans of Coca-Cola sold were flat or sour, people would quickly stop buying. Consistency means delivering the same value over time. One of the reasons New Coke failed in the mid-1980s was that customers expected Coke to taste a certain way, and the company delivered something completely new under the same name. Violating consistency led to a swift decline in sales, followed by a swift increase when the Coca-Cola company restored the original formula. Violating the expectations of loyal customers is not the way to success. If you're offering something completely different, present it as something new. Reliability means being able to count on delivery of the value without error or delay. Ask Microsoft Windows users what they hate most about their computers, and they'll always tell you system crashes. Unreliability is a huge frustration for a user, particularly when predictability is at a premium. How would you feel if you were building a house and a contractor didn't show up on time? Improving predictability has major reputation and value perception benefits. The more predictable your standard offering is, the more you'll be able to increase the perceived quality of the products and the services that you offer. Throughput. Throughput is the rate at which a system achieves its desired goal. By understanding and improving the process you use to actually create and deliver the value you've promised to your customers, you can improve quality and customer satisfaction. Throughput is a measure of the effectiveness of your value stream. Throughput is measured in the formula units divided by time. The more results you create per unit of time, the higher the throughput. In order to measure throughput, you need a clearly defined objective. Dollar throughput is a measure of how quickly your overall business system creates $1 of profit. Assume a standard time unit, like an hour or a day or a week or a month. How many dollars does your business system produce on average during that time? The faster your business produces dollars of profit, the better. Unit throughput is a measure of how much time it takes to create an additional unit for sale. How long does it take to go from raw materials to a finished unit rolling off the production line? The faster the throughput, the more units you'll have to sell, and the faster you'll be able to respond to new demand for those products. Satisfaction throughput is a measure of how much time it takes to create a happy, satisfied customer. It takes restaurants like Chipotle Mexican Grill approximately 3 minutes from the time the customer enters the restaurant to the time they receive their order. The less time it takes to create a happy customer, the more customers you can serve in an hour, and the more happy customers you can create every day. The longer customers have to wait, the fewer customers you can serve in an hour, and the less satisfied they will be with the experience. The best way to begin increasing throughput is to start measuring it. How long does it take for your business system to produce a dollar of profit? How long does it take to produce another unit to sell or a new happy customer? If you don't know your throughput, make it a priority to find out. Measuring throughput is the first step to improving it. Duplication. Duplication is the ability to reliably reproduce something of value. Factory production is the quintessential example of duplication. One design, many copies. Instead of reinventing the wheel over and over again, duplication allows you to design the wheel once, then make as many of them as you wish. The better your ability to duplicate your offer, the more value you can provide. The more time and effort it takes to make something, the less available it tends to be. Duplication allows you to make copies of your offer quickly and inexpensively, making it more widely available in a cost-effective way. Consider this book. In the olden days, books used to be copied and bound by hand. It would take a scribe months, sometimes years, of full-time work to copy a single book. As a result, books were extremely expensive and difficult to obtain. How times have changed. Was written only once, and recorded only once, but via the wonder of large-scale printing equipment and recording equipment, it can be reproduced quickly, reliably, and inexpensively. As a result, tens of millions of copies can be made and distributed all over the world and can be purchased for a few dollars. That's the magic of duplication. The internet has made duplication of some forms of value even easier. As Kevin Kelly remarked in his essay, Better Than Free, the internet is essentially an enormous, inexpensive copy machine. When I write a post for personalmba.com, it can be duplicated by my web server for next to nothing and delivered to a reader on the other side of the world almost instantly. Duplication of information, text, images, music, and video, is essentially free. The value of this information, however, can be quite significant. If you want to create something that you can sell without your direct involvement, the ability to duplicate your offer is essential. If you have to be personally involved with every customer, there's an upper limit on the number of customers you can serve in a given amount of time. Combining duplication with automation allows you to deliver value to more people and close more sales as a result. Multiplication. McDonald's knows how to duplicate Big Macs. Starbucks knows how to duplicate triple soy vanilla lattes. Here's what McDonald's and Starbucks have in common. Both businesses can duplicate entire stores, which is why there are thousands of each all over the world. Multiplication is duplication for an entire process or system. McDonald's began as a single restaurant in California. Starbucks began as a single coffee shop in Seattle. By learning to duplicate the entire business system that is a McDonald's or Starbucks store, each company opened new possibilities for growth. Walmart did the same thing. Starting with a single store in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Walmart multiplied at an astounding rate, spreading rapidly across the Midwest, then nationally, then globally. Walmart's success lies in multiplying two interconnected systems, stores, and distribution centers. Distribution centers multiply the ability to receive inventory from suppliers and deliver it to stores. Stores replicate a proven system of receiving, displaying, and selling that inventory to paying customers. Multiplication is what separates small businesses from huge businesses. There's an upper limit on what any single business system can produce. By creating more identical business systems based on a proven model, multiplication can expand a business's ability to deliver value to more customers. That's the major benefit of franchising. Instead of reinventing a business model, opening a franchise helps multiply a model that already works. The easier it is to multiply your business system, the more value you can ultimately deliver. Scale. Think of a skilled quilter who specializes in creating quilts by hand. Assuming each quilt takes a week to produce, having one active customer a week is great. Creating and delivering a single quilt to a single customer is no problem at all. Having two customers at once is challenging. Customer number two has to wait until customer number one is served. If the quilt maker receives 1,000 orders in a single day, that's a huge issue. There's no way to keep up with the demand without keeping customers waiting, which creates an undesirable level of scarcity. Scale is the ability to reliably duplicate or multiply a process as volume increases. Scalability determines your maximum potential volume. The easier it is to duplicate or multiply the value provided, the more scalable the business. Contrast the handmade quilt business with a scalable business like Starbucks. Assume the average Starbucks has the capacity to serve 100 beverages an hour. Any demand above that, and the store starts getting overcrowded. The solution? Build another Starbucks, even if it's right across the street, not an uncommon sight in cities like New York. Scalability is typically limited by the amount of required human involvement in a process. Starbucks is able to enhance their ability to duplicate lattes via automation. Starbucks employees are involved in making drinks, but the process is semi-automated. A machine actually makes the espresso. Many of the ingredients are prepared ahead of time, and so on. The overall level of human attention or intervention that's required to make a good drink is actually quite small, which is why Starbucks can crank out so many drinks every hour. If your goal is to create a business that doesn't require your direct daily involvement, scalability should be a major consideration. Products are typically the easiest to duplicate, while shared resources, like gyms, are easiest to multiply. Humans don't scale. Individual people only have so much time and energy each day, which is a constraint that doesn't change with the volume of work to be done. On the contrary, as we'll discuss later in performance load, a person's effectiveness usually goes down as the demands on them increase. As a result, services are typically difficult to scale, since they tend to rely heavily on the direct involvement of people to deliver value. As a general rule, the less human involvement required to create and deliver value, the more scalable the business. Accumulation. At this very moment, a Toyota engineer somewhere in the world is making a very small change to the Toyota production system, one of the most efficient manufacturing systems in the world. Alone, the change may not look like much, a small tweak, a slight restructure, a bit of material or effort saved. Taken together, however, the effects are huge. Toyota employees implement over 1 million improvements to the Toyota production system every year. It's little wonder that Toyota is now the world's largest and most valuable automotive manufacturer. Small, helpful, or harmful behaviors and inputs tend to accumulate over time, producing huge results. According to the book Lean Thinking by James P. Womack and Daniel T. Jones, Toyota's approach is based on the Japanese concept of Kaizen, which emphasizes the continual improvement of a system by eliminating muda, or waste, via many small changes. Small improvements, consistently implemented, inevitably produce huge results. Accumulation isn't always positive. Think of what would happen to your body if you consumed nothing but fast food, candy bars, and soda for a decade. Eating a single candy bar isn't a big deal, but eating hundreds of candy bars is. Fortunately, the opposite is true as well. Small improvements in your diet, a little more exercise, and a little more sleep can have major effects on your health over time. Incremental augmentation is an example of the power of accumulation. If your offer improves with every iteration cycle, it won't be long before your offer is many times more valuable to your customers than it was before. Small changes to your value delivery process can save you a ton of time and energy in the long run. The more small improvements you make over time, the better your results. Amplification. Think of a typical can of soda. When cans were first used to sell beverages, they were cylindrical, flat-topped, and made of steel. Over time, steel was phased out in favor of aluminum, pull tabs were introduced to make opening easier, and the can was necked, tapered slightly at the top. Necking a can has two major effects. First, it makes it easier to drink from, which users like. Second, it reduces the amount of metal necessary to produce a structurally sound can. The walls of a typical beverage can are now around 90 micrometers thick instead of about 2 millimeters, saving an enormous amount of raw materials. According to the Can Manufacturers Institute, approximately 131 billion cans are manufactured every year in the United States. When you multiply the cost savings of modern can designs across billions of cans and several decades, a few very small changes have saved the beverage industry hundreds of billions of dollars. That's amplification. Making a small change to a scalable system produces a huge result. The effect of any improvement or system optimization is amplified by the size of the system. The larger the system, the larger the result. When McDonald's comes up with a new sandwich, they're not limited to just selling it in one of their stores. They can start selling it in all of their stores around the world. When Starbucks comes up with a new drink, it can be made available to customers in every Starbucks location extremely quickly. The best way to identify amplification opportunities is to look for things that are consistently duplicated or multiplied. If Starbucks found a way to produce a shot of espresso using fewer coffee beans, it would make a huge difference in the amount of coffee they'd need to buy. If they discovered a way to make that espresso shot more quickly, it would reduce the time it takes to serve a customer and increase the number of customers a single store could serve in an hour. Scalable systems amplify the results of small changes. Small changes to scalable systems produce massive results. Barrier to competition. How much attention are you paying to what your competitors are doing? The more time and energy you spend following your competition, the less time and energy you have to actually build your business. Think of a company like Apple. There's no other company in the technology world that focuses less on keeping up with what other companies are providing. Instead, they focus on building something completely new and remarkable, then perfecting it as much as possible. Apple's competitors, on the other hand, seem to be locked in a never-ending scramble to keep up. After Apple launched the iPhone in 2007, BlackBerry scrambled to create the Storm, which replicated many of the same features. By the time the Storm launched, the iPhone had already gone through several iteration cycles, making it very difficult for BlackBerry to compete. To date, Apple has sold over 50 million iPhones worldwide. Instead of trying to compete directly with commodity laptop manufacturers like Asus, HP, and Dell in the netbook category, Apple conspicuously avoided the market for years. That changed when the iPad was launched in 2010, an offer that redefined the market instead of competing directly with pre-existing netbooks on features. In the first 2 months of its existence, the company sold over 2 million units. By choosing to innovate instead of compete, Apple successfully captured a leadership share of a very competitive market. Every improvement you make to your value stream makes it harder for potential competitors to keep up. By increasing your ability to create and deliver value efficiently and effectively, you're simultaneously making it more difficult for competitors to compete with you by doing what you're doing. Every benefit you deliver and every customer you serve makes it harder for competitors to replicate you. Don't focus on competing. Focus on delivering even more value. Your competition will take care of itself. Force multiplier. One of the things that makes humans unique is our ability to create and use tools. Tools are important because they multiply the effect of physical force, thought, or attention. The more a tool amplifies or concentrates your effort, the more effective the tool. If you try pounding on a nail with your bare hands, you'll certainly be able to exert some force, but it won't be enough to drive the nail into something solid. Besides, you'll probably hurt your hand. Using a hammer multiplies the magnitude of the force you're exerting and concentrates that force into a very small area, making it easy to drive a nail in a single stroke. Saws, screwdrivers, and other tools work the same way. They amplify and concentrate the force you generate to produce more output. The most effective tools amplify force in the greatest magnitude. A power saw is far more effective at multiplying force than a handsaw is. A dump truck can carry more than a wheelbarrow. A rocket can launch a payload farther than a slingshot. Investing in force multipliers makes sense because you can get more done with the same amount of effort. If you need to dig the foundation to build a new house, a $10 shovel from your local hardware store will certainly work, but a backhoe will get the job done faster and easier. If building homes is your business, buying or leasing a backhoe is worth the cost. Force multipliers can be expensive. The more effective they are, the more expensive they tend to be. Factory production and distribution systems are examples of large-scale force multipliers. They make it possible to deliver value to thousands or millions of paying customers in a very short time. They may cost thousands or millions of dollars, but they can give you capabilities that would otherwise be out of reach. As a general rule, the only good use of debt or outside capital in setting up a system is to give you access to force multipliers you would not be able to access any other way. If your business requires tooling up a factory, you probably don't have $10 million sitting in your bank account. Taking a loan from a bank or accepting capital from an outside investor may be your best option, provided you use those funds to purchase and maintain force multipliers, not to pay yourself or maintain rent on a fancy office. Always choose the best tools that you can obtain and afford. Quality tools give you maximum output with a minimum of input. By investing in force multipliers, you free up your time, energy, and attention to focus on building your business instead of simply operating it. Systemization. Even if you make everything up as you go along, there is still a process involved, assuming that multiple steps are needed to get from point A to point B. Instead of constantly winging it, clarifying your process can provide a few major benefits. A system is a process made explicit and repeatable, a series of steps that has been formalized in some way. Systems can be written or diagrammed, but they are always externalized, which we'll discuss later, in some way. The primary benefit of creating a system is that you can examine the process and make improvements. By making each step in the process explicit, you can understand how the core processes work, how they're structured, how they affect other processes and systems, and how you can improve the system over time. Google is a great example of the power of systems. Every time you use the Google search engine, thousands of computers automatically spring into action to deliver your results. Google's search algorithm, a fancy programming word for system, defines how these computers work together, and Google employees are constantly refining the details of how the system works. Each year, Google engineers make over 550 improvements to the primary search engine algorithm, making it better able to point you to what you're looking for. As a result, the Google algorithm has become so efficient that your search results are returned in 0.2 seconds with zero human intervention. An astounding achievement. If Google hadn't spent most of their early time and energy defining and systematizing the search process, the company simply wouldn't exist. Systems also help teams of people stay on the same page. As we'll discuss in Chapter 8, communication is necessary for people to work well together, and the more people you're working with, the more communication you need. Developing systems and clear processes for certain events and tasks can help everyone do what must be done with a minimum of misunderstanding and fuss. If you can't systematize your process, you can't automate it. Imagine what it would be like if Google relied on a team of human librarians to generate search results. It'd be a nightmare. You'd wait days or weeks or months to get your results. The key to Google's quality and speed is automation. By explicitly defining the rules of how the system operates, the search engine programmers are able to automate the day-to-day operation of the system. As a result, Google developers are free to focus their efforts on continually improving the system instead of on operating the system. Most people resist creating business systems because it feels like extra work. We're all busy, and it's easy to feel like you don't have time to create and improve systems because there's already too much work to do. Actually, useful systems make your work easier. If you're feeling overloaded, the best thing you can do to solve the issue is to spend time creating good systems. Systemization and automation have a few major drawbacks, which we'll explore in detail in chapters 10 and 11. For now, recognize that effective systems are the lifeblood of a business. They allow you to create, market, sell, and ultimately deliver what you have to offer. The better your systems, the better your business.